This is the 1UP Radio Network, and now GFW Radio.
Hello, and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for March 20th, 2007, and for the first time in so many weeks, we are all back together, the whole editorial staff of GFW Radio. Put my glasses down, Ryan. And I'm here with the staff, which includes...
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Ryan and I are, thank you. Ryan and I are sporting, unlike you two, our brand new official Games for Windows, the official magazine, the official track jacket.
Way to be team players.
Yep. I feel in the spirit wearing this jacket here. I'm feeling gung-ho about Games for Windows.
It's still in the room.
People say that Microsoft's not behind this initiative.
It's like I could imagine you guys like on the way to the Toyota factory or whatever to, you know, doing your calisthenics before you start the day.
We might work out together later, right, Ryan?
Actually, I was thinking more like a breakdance. I was thinking more like a breakdance crew kind of tracksuit you got going on.
Yeah, we could breakdance later, then work out.
Go up against EGM.
Yeah,
we're awesome.
So people are saying that Microsoft's not really pushing this Games for Windows initiative hard enough, but apparently they haven't seen the official track jackets.
You need proof?
So in your face.
Everyone.
Okay, so hi, everyone. I heard the last couple podcasts that I wasn't on were great, which tells me something.
So, who told you that?
The message boards did.
No.
So I'm just going to shut up. You guys take it.
No, this isn't going to work.
No.
Okay, so we've been talking before we got a lot to talk about today, in fact. We're going to hear Sean's opinions, long-awaited opinions, Sean Elliott's on Stalker, because he's reviewing it for us in the next issue. We're going to talk about Peggle, early game of the year contender.
Damn you, PopCap.
We're going to answer some reader questions.
Ill 2? We got Ill 2.
Ill 2. We're going to talk Ill 2. Uh-huh. I know what that stands for.
I just wanted to say
I'm still
Ill.
Trying to figure it out.
This game is ill.
And but we had a couple philosophical issues we've been battering around here the last week or so here at the magazine.
Indeed,
it worked out well. Like last week, I was hoping to bring these up, but I kind of wanted to draw on your experience because the first one involves something that you were the one that told me about it.
Yeah.
So
well, it happened over at GDC.
So the theme here, both of them are instances where people that are in the industry or people that do make games for a living have publicly said that people in our position who write about games for a living can't do a few things, or there's a few things we're not qualified to do. So the first one, I'll let you take it from here, is in short that we can't review or critique a game without having made a game for ourselves.
Right.
Whatever.
Not,
right.
No.
So go ahead.
That's wrong.
Right. This showed up. We were.
But bring up. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Just
Ryan,
this
Ryan Scott
where did you
and
hear
I.
This
and
how
we,
did you
we
hear
this?
This
at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco two weeks ago. So this is that part of the story is a bit old news, but I wasn't around here to talk about that. But Ryan and I had attended a conference at the Game Developers Conference, a roundtable of game developers mostly, and there were a few journalists. Talking about the subject was game criticism. And it basically turned into a kind of lots of developers bitching about how shitty game reviews are these days, which for the most part, they're right. But one point that came up was, which was agreed upon, it got some huzzas around the table, these guys, meaning us, are not really qualified to review video games because they don't know anything about what it takes to make a game like this. They haven't been there. They don't know what it's like to program. They don't know what it's like to do 3D art. They don't know what it's like to write dialogue for game characters. So who are they to judge whether a game is good or not?
And didn't surprisingly, I think you told me that at least one member of the press was sort of, these guys know what they're saying.
Well, he's the one who brought it up.
No, he wasn't the one who brought it up, but he quickly assented to when that point was brought up. It was somebody who actually not only worked for the press, but they worked for 1UP.
At one point.
And he was sort of like, yeah, you're right. So, and I was like, what? What the fuck are you talking about?
when I heard it.
Because I don't know what it's like to spend 50 bucks on a game that's total crap.
That's absurd. Of course, that's the main point. We do know what it's like to spend 50 bucks for a game. We are writing from the point of view of a game player, mm-hmm. which is who they're marketing and selling those games to, people who play games.
Yeah, first, on just a note, I mean, before you even need to elaborate, you can just make a few comparisons, and it seems to make
right,
great
and they're
deal
obvious
sense.
Ones, but go ahead.
It's like, have you, I mean, to know, to be able to say anything good or bad about a television show or a movie or a comic book or a song, do you need to have made any of those things yourself? And that's on an artistic level. On a mechanical level or a technical level, say if you're a fighter pilot or something, do you need to have manufactured a plane yourself or designed a plane to test a plane and say, hey, this is useful, this is going to be good for me under the circumstances that it was created to be used in? So that's backwards logic. That's pretty, you know, that makes it clear. But at the same time, like you said, we do know what it's like to have bought a game. And because these guys, actually, I would argue that in some ways that they're probably less qualified to review games having worked on them. And I'm not saying they're not qualified. I don't want to reverse this and say, you can't, if you've made a game, you can't review a game. But just this, if you follow me here for a second, because you know and you appreciate the difficulties involved in all these things, and you are going to be sympathetic to those
difficulties. You're
totally
going to go easy on them.
You're going to go easy on them in ways that an average consumer just does not give a shit about.
Yeah.
Because they don't care about, okay, well, it's extraordinarily difficult to stream this kind of, you know, information pack under these circumstances. They just don't care.
Right.
All they see is this game fun? Is it doing, you know, does that guy's face look like a melted mannequin? You know, I mean, whatever it comes down
to. If so, plus one star.
right. And we all are experts at playing games.
Right.
And enjoying games. You know?
Right.
So,
you know,
we
take it actually even a step further, which only further proves the point you're making, which is that we won't let someone review a game here if we feel that they're too close to the development team as it is. Like if I know somebody has like, what was that, Sean?
No,
some kind of bodily
some
function.
Gas eruption on that.
I don't know where it came from.
I puked in my mouth a little bit.
the freaking geyser coming up there.
It tasted like rotten McDonald's.
Awesome. Where were we?
What were you talking
about? If we know
if
somebody
is
close to the developer, we don't want them to review the game because we think, you know, like if you've been to see whoever, like Darren, okay, you've now gone to see the guy's making a Hellgate, sorry, a couple times now.
Mm-hmm.
I would be not inclined to have you review the game because you've been hanging out with those guys. You know what they've been doing. I don't mean even on a friend basis, but even just seeing them do the work makes me think you might be more inclined to give them a break.
That's another story, though. I mean, I'm saying like, I mean, my argument is that if you know all the ins and outs of the development in general, and you're sympathizing with just how difficult it is to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think in that case, it's really like you want to insulate our critique against like sort of nepotism or something, you know. You don't want like, I mean, if we gotten too close to the project or something. Mm-hmm. But in this case, if you're saying you know the circumstances it was created in, I don't know. That's another story because it is interesting because I do know for a story I'm working on now that PR people will actively try to guarantee that it is the writer who spent the most time previewing and visiting, you know, the developers that are making a game that's the same person who actually does the review.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's funny. It swings either way because like there are games. I mean, whatever with Hellgate, but I mean, like there are some games that I know I followed really closely. And then when the game finally came out and I actually was on board to review something, I was actually harder on it than a lot of people because I saw the potential that was blown early on.
Right. Well, you're right. Maybe it's a different topic. I mean, the basic one you're saying is that we brought up in the first place, I think, is right. I mean, and listen, it applies to like every single aspect of the entire world of art. I mean, painting, architecture, music. I mean, none of the professional critics anywhere, not, I shouldn't say none.
Right.
But in general, the average critic is not someone who came from that field.
Right.
Their field was actually journalism.
And it's an age old, I mean, far older than games. I mean, for people that have been critics of novels, you know, literary critics and everything else, I mean, a version of this argument has been around for, mm-hmm. for ages. But it was just really, I don't know, it's kind of stunned me to hear that coming out of this, you know, this games development conference, there's something so idiotic as that. And then not only that, you didn't just hear someone in the snack line, a dude whose nickname is Little Big Planet because he weighs like 400 plus, you know, getting himself a churro or something. You didn't hear him like mumble that. But there was like, there was time, there's space and time set aside for the purpose of saying that you can't comment or critique a game unless you've produced a game.
Well, really, the whole roundtable was a bit, I don't know. What did you think, Ryan?
I don't know. They kept dancing around all this stuff that they couldn't really quantify.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I wasn't there, but it sounds like a bunch of like irate coders who worked on games that got panned in the press in their eyes unfairly.
It was sort of like, you remember that There Is No Lester Bangs of video games.
Right, there was a lot of that going on.
It was like that.
There's no Lester Bangs, there's no Roger Ebert of the games industry. I mean, it was just a lot of stuff that you could take apart in 10 different ways.
Okay, so basically one of us has to make Beyond Valleys of the Doll the game. Or
exactly.
Something. I mean, like,
then. Only then.
Only then will we be
able to know how to do this.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like that point that, you know, we can't critique games unless we know what it is to make them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like them just begging, like, well, why don't you just give everybody an A for effort? Right? I mean, that's what that boils down to.
Kinda.
I'd say that's fair. That's another.
Well, I made a text adventure as a child.
Maybe we should have a separate grade for
effort category.
Give everybody a gold star.
All right, the effort. So the other thing that we were told comes from, and this has been sort of beaten to death, but I think that at least I wanted to comment on it and see what you guys say, because I think it was a slightly different thing to say about it. This is Dennis Dyack of Silicon Knights, which is making Too Human for Xbox 360, was on EGM Live, just the EGM podcast. It wasn't even last week. It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's how old played out this is. But anyway, part of the whole thing that caused such a sensation on there was that he took EGM to task for having an opinionated preview. And it's different. Like, I want to take it more general and say, you know, like, because I think his argument was you should the very notion of an evaluative preview is kind of pointless. It's kind of stupid. There's like a whole sub argument there about it being about the way that it appeared, because that was, you know, EGM's E3 issue, and it appeared in the context of an E3 feature. And their logic on that, of course, is that for the same reason that you see all these the same developers, like I'm sure whoever publishes, you know, it's not Dyack's doing, but whoever publishes game, if they won some E3 judges awards, they'll be more than happy to put those on the box or on the promotional website or something, you know, hey, we won. So more and more people put playable product at the show floor in a way to be expected to be evaluated. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, just the assumption's there. If you can win an award,
mm-hmm.
right, someone's evaluating your stuff. So it's like, either don't accept the award.
You have judges.
But so in the larger scheme of things, though, I agree with them in this sense. You don't. It would be. And we talked about this before on the show. You know, I felt like, okay, they're just going right where we've been, in that. It's so dumb to write a preview and talk about how the frame rates are coming along or how such and such technical aspects of the game need to be addressed.
Right.
I mean, it's just the same as if, you know, you're writing a preview for Entertainment Weekly of whatever movie, King Kong or something, and you talked about how, well, right now there's people running around and screaming in front of a green screen, but we have every reason to believe that in 6 months' time, a large gorilla will take the place of that screen and we'll be grabbing these people. So that's completely stupid, and I agree with it. However, that said, the essence of the game, so to speak, or whatever the design of the game, I think is totally, we're totally able to comment on it and evaluate it.
Right.
Not only, it's not even a matter of if we are or not. We just do it. It's a matter of if we own up to it or not. Like, whenever, say, companies come in here, this is going to get us in trouble. We won't name any names. But say a company comes here, they come to our floor, and we have one up here, Electronic Gaming Monthly, Games for Windows Magazine. And if there's a demo, if it's something that's caught people's eye, you know, mm-hmm. it might be the pedigree or it might be just the premise of the game or whatever, but everyone's in there, you know, and they want to see it. Then there mm-hmm. are times when there's like no one in there. There's like one person like goes in there just because they feel obligated to. Uh-huh.
It's kind of like Russian roulette.
And they're already,
the rest of us are all hiding.
So at that point, you're already evaluating things to the extent where you can say, okay, if this is a game, like, you know, here's another case. You know, they brought in Elvion a while ago, and this game has got, it's got every chance of becoming something cool, you know, a 360 and PC mm-hmm. game that's based on, you know, fighting and whatnot. But looking at it, I immediately said, this is a hack and slash game where you run around and there's no puzzle solving or anything to break the monotony. So it's entirely going to come down to how engaging it is to fight. However, although there's combo systems in place and stuff like that, you could do more than just mash A. It seemed oblivious to what God of War has done, what, you know, even Devil May Cry has done to, you know, Ninja Gaiden, what these other games have done and what the price of entry has since mm-hmm. changed to in this category of game. And immediately I can say, well, my gut so far as it says, this is not going to be, if this is all there is to it, no, you know, it's not going to be. And you could say it's going to change, but so many times, and we don't talk about these things, we're proved right, you know. Other people yep. review it, and they say, well, that's interesting. That was exactly what I was wondering about, like, you know, 12 months ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. So in cases like those, I think you can – it's not a conclusive. It's not like – I mean, there's always the element of that a game can change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's a preview, that's the whole no-show. It's a work in progress, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you can – I do think, I mean, that we can do it. Not only that, here's another point. Game companies, Ubisoft, EA, for example, will employ people full-time. They're called game evaluators. And what they do, and I was actually offered a position at a major publisher before I decided to work for GFW, for CGW. And part of that was doing, you know, writing mock evaluations and talking to people basically. And this is based on anything from a very primitive version of a game to just a design document. We're already at that phase. They're wanting you to evaluate. Not just, is this a product category that people are willing to buy? Is it going to make us money? But does this have any chance of being cool, of being mm-hmm. a good game? And if they're already doing that, the publishers are already doing that and employing people full-time to do that. Again, I just think it reinforces mm-hmm. the idea that you can do something. You can't mm-hmm. you can make some judgment calls.
Well, they just don't
before.
Want it unless it's positive.
Right.
But I don't know. I think sometimes in the past we've run evaluative to a degree previews, and we'd made a comment, and that actually got I can't remember the exact example right now, but I made a comment about something that needed to be fixed in a game, and by the time the game came out, they actually made that change, that exact mm-hmm. change. I'm like, well, good. I'm glad in some small way. I'm glad I that game got fixed. If mm-hmm. if not by my saying it, then at least a billion other editors who probably said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think there is some merit to it as long as you balance it out and not make it like, okay, the game's going to suck because of this. Just as long as, you know,
right.
I view it as constructive criticism.
Just the pieces. You have to figure out which pieces are the ones that are important. And,
right.
like, you know, the most likely to not change by the end is, like, you know, the design decisions made from the beginning. Same like if you read a script for a movie, to bring it back to, you know, another art form, you could say, all right, you can read the King Kong script, and you know... You know certain things about the movie, whereas like if you saw the green screen, you would just kind of dismiss that and say, "Of course they're going to fix it." But you can't really. The script's what it is. You know what it's going to
right.
be.
Right, and that's the really dumb part about our.
Well, that's a problem of the,
like, about our industry is that I mean, because we're halfway between like technical pages and mm-hmm. and art critics, you know.
Let the immaturity of the critics at this point. They just haven't quite figured out how to like where to fall on that spectrum, and they sometimes get so wrapped up in the eye candy. They forget
well,
about
I think
the
it's the immaturity of the entire business. The one good point that somebody made at that Game Critics Roundup that I thought was interesting was, and maybe kind of true, was he said that like because so much of what happens with new games and new generations of games is technology based.
Right.
That the writing about it gets lost in that, and he said it's as if somebody were to review a movie in 1950 and basically be reviewing CinemaScope.
Yeah.
You know, or uh-huh. Technicolor.
Exactly. The engine's equivalent. Yeah.
As opposed to the actual, you know, content. Mm-hmm. And that maybe if there becomes a point, and maybe there is, will never be a point though, but where games kind of stabilize, well, we're not just talking about the technology all the time, that we can sort of get beyond mm-hmm. that being, you know, the bullet point list that we go through.
Right. I mean, that's the assumption in every category of, in every aspect of games. I mean, that's when you'll start getting more. And I'm not saying that you don't have games that have just really rich and vibrant art design now as opposed to graphics, you know. But you'll get more of that. It's no longer going to be about just proving that you actually look good. But then, and then you can start worrying. You stop worrying about that. You start worrying about the story. Start worrying about, you know, the AI to a greater extent than you ever have. And quality of interaction and all these other things. Whereas, like right now, I mean, it's a well known fact. What one of the chief selling points of a game is how good it looks, and mm-hmm. we can go all the way back to, I mean, some of the best looking pieces of shit that have ever been greenlit. You know,
yeah. Yep.
Mad Dog McCree exists. We can bring that up. No, oh. hurt anyone's feelings.
Dragon Slayer.
Mad Dog McCree.
Well, Dennis Dyack's point, though, I mean, they, you know, those developers basically just want to see you lavish praise on their games.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
To his credit, I think he did say. I mean, what did he say that he was for? He says he is for, you know, harsher criticism and whatnot. And again, it's like the point. I don't want to rehash everything about that. I mean, there have been tons of threads all over and two podcasts focusing on that. And I just kind of wanted to address that specific aspect of it. But
it's really, you know, the reason why most of us hate writing previews, because you're so caught in between this notion of, you know, you want to be fair to the game. It's not done. Mm-hmm. You know it's not done. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be too harsh on it, because that would be a little unfair.
Totally. Right.
Yet, on the other hand, we're not hired by EA or Ubisoft or whoever to do their PR for them. Mm. It's not our job to just give them publicity. We're trying to, like, tell other gamers about this game, right? And that's hard to do in a way. You know, it's like you're saying, it's almost by necessity you have to put some kind of opinion into there. Otherwise, you know, let's just, like, reprint their press release, you know?
And to a large degree, that's how it used to be. I mean, like, it's only in the past few years that people are fine. Like, at least we've always been pretty good about it, but by and large, you know, bloggers, websites, some other magazines, the Shadow Domain Nameless, pretty much just reposted, you know, press releases.
There is a case.
In some cases, it actually was a press release.
It was an actual. I mean, the magazine's gone now, but it was called PSE2, PlayStation Extreme.
Oh, that was my favorite example.
And they had the Transformers cover story, and I was reading it. When I first started in this business, I'd read everything. But so I was reading it, and I was like, wait a minute, this sounds familiar. And I was reviewing the same game, and I had just gotten all the press materials for it along with the review. And I was like, wait a minute. So I went and I pulled the press release out, and I held it up against the page, and they had pasted about 600, 700 words maybe into the story direct, not even piecemeal, not even like a paragraph here or that, but just a block that big. If you took just this giant block of text and hit paste, and then you just wrote around it.
Wow.
And for one, I mean, that's just sad, but I mean, and on so many levels, even stylistically, that no one's going to notice that it's not a Frankenstein job, because your writing is so indistinguishable from a press release anyway that no one's even going to see the duct tape on that thing.
You know? The same thing happened with Prey. I forget where I saw this. I it was either a review or a really, really late preview, but they actually, like, line for line, took the text from the press release and, like, just put it right into the text.
Wow, we're working way too hard around here.
We talked about that before. I remember that was like the whole hero's journey thing. And...
Yeah, that's exactly.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That review.
The only reason I remember
that's right.
The only reason why I remember that is because in my story, I put it in quotes and kind of called and kind of turned the tables and called them on it.
If we're talking about the same one, it was Jeff who did it.
Huh?
Are we talking?
You wrote
about...
it.
I plagiarized.
No, I'm thinking of like the hero's journey shit, and in your review.
I wrote it in my preview like. Way before, but maybe he brought it up as
I'm
well.
Confused, yeah.
I brought it up as a joke in my review.
Yeah.
I think I obliquely referenced.
This
that.
Is so like okay.
This
let me
is
back
too insider.
I don't.
Yeah, we're getting
sorry.
Too insider.
Just real
right
quick,
back,
so people can understand what this is about. Basically, one review for a game had come out, and there was a line that seemed really out of place for yeah. for this publication. Yeah. It was like, why are they bringing up this reference? And Darren pointed out that he had the press release and that reference was on there. And so you look at it and it was like, okay, so that's where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a review. This is really bad, actually.
Reviewing the reviewers, yeah.
You know, some publishers will put together what they call a reviewer's guide.
Oh, yeah.
And they give it to you. Yeah. And it's not like the manual or anything. It's like a list of points that they think are really cool
here's
about the game.
Here's things you might want to mention
and yeah, and
in your review.
Yeah, and if you're just a complete...
And here's a score you might want to put on your
piece
review.
Of shit, you know? Like, you'll just go and you'll go through that and you'll write an outline based on the... Or use, like, the outline provided in there and
uh-huh.
talk about these
key
and that.
Key points of our game include...
Yeah.
Right.
They are... I wonder if they're more based on the features and stuff. At least the game guides don't even break it down by the usual graphics and audio. And
I think you're right though. In my Prey review, I made some reference to.
Yeah,
you did.
Because it all came up after the fact. So yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Go back and look at that and piece together
so
whatever
the
hell
story.
We're talking about.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Sorry,
our own hero's journey.
We're rambling here on the podcast.
Yeah,
we're sorry.
We're rambling. So, but bring it back.
Bring it on back.
Let's bring it on back to some evaluation. Of a game
to do
that
some
you're playing.
Of, some
Speaking
of what we
some
just,
opinions.
Yeah. So how's that Stalker, Sean?
It's very cool. And I think my review is going to go up. Actually, my review might beat this podcast, or it's going to come out around the same time.
Really? So you beat the game? You're done?
So yeah,
you just wrapped it up this weekend, right?
I can say the whole thing, huh? I might as well just not say the score, just in case there's like an hour or so that like this podcast beats the text by and I get in trouble. But I did.
Thank you very much.
I can't review games. I can't even talk. So yeah, where to begin on this thing? I solved the game tape. twice, but I got the thing is, this is one of those games with multiple endings.
So you got two different endings so far.
To get to that, but there's seven endings all together, and it's got that annoying thing where I don't want to start with this. I'm already starting with it, but there's like two true endings and five like schlub endings, and I got a schlub ending. And that's kind of like a disservice anyway to tell someone they didn't get the real and get the real ending. But okay, starting from the very beginning, this game is great, and I think that if you have any interest in playing, you know, first-person shooters, especially on PC, you definitely need to play it. If you look at what's happened to first-person shooters that are, you know, North American made over the years, just like this game will put it in perspective and show you how, you know, once upon a time you had, you know, System Shock and Deus Ex and Thief, and there was like the certain way that things were going, and then all of a sudden it was like the reign of Call of Duty and Half-Life and this other sort of like very strict, very linear. I mean, people talk about a roller coaster, and it's a played out analogy for it, but it's pretty fair in that you get on the rails and various exciting things happen to you, and like, you have some degree, and you're able to, I mean, the choices you make are always just basically how fast are you going to go along the rails and what weapon are you going to shoot with.
Yeah, it all went horribly wrong with Medal of Honor.
And those are fun games. Even if you want to say that you know that Half-Life is that way, I mean, there's so much about it. I don't want to turn this into defending what Half-Life and Half-Life 2 do so well, but it's a different type of game. And then I say that with Far Cry, the PC game, which I have to again clarify, I mean, because if some of our audience is listening and they only have console experience, it was a different game than the ones released by Ubisoft on Xbox and later on Xbox 360. But it was also similar, but it was actually developed in Germany. And you get the sense there that, like, okay, we're going to just create this large environment. There are going to be any of number of ways to get through it. You're going to have missions and stuff still, but you're just not going to follow this specific rail. We're going to have to throw, you know, some other elements in it to make it entertaining no matter what path you take. So the trade-off has always been in that, obviously, just, you know, Ryan, thanks for yawning. I'm just killing my heart.
There's got to take the wind out of the room.
God, man. I don't want to talk about this.
You're just feeling.
Well, of course, the difference would be this heavily scripted scenario where action, the highest magnitude, is happening every other minute. You know, stalkers are coming out and guys are breaking through walls and stuff, as opposed to maybe you take a path and all you're going to run into is like a dude with a guitar sitting out in a field and maybe a dog that's running around like looking for something to eat. You know, that's not necessarily what you will run into, but that very well might be. If you give the player that much control, you know, unless you're going to just cover the board like Centipede with monsters everywhere, I mean, that could be the nature of the experience. So anyway, it's that sort of game. Closer to Oblivion. It's kind of like halfway between Oblivion and then the shooters that we know. But I think it's just so much fun because, God, I'm so... I was ready to talk about this. I spent all this time writing a review, and I'm trying to like say different things that I say in the review without, you know, to make something that's complimentary to it. But
Well, one thing I'll say while you're trying to fish for the words,
bail me out,
lifeline. No, I mean, I've been dying to play this game for freaking ever, man. And I came back, and as soon as I heard you had a copy of it, I called THQ, begged for an extra code, and started playing it this weekend too, and. I had a lot of Vista crash issues. So that's actually like it's known issues and it keeps crashing in Vista. So there's a patch coming, but I tell you, it was like I felt like Sisyphus this whole weekend. I'd play for 5 minutes, it would crash. I would reload the game and quick save it and just I'd keep basically pushing the edge further as I can go every time. But every little bit that I appreciated.
Yeah, no one told you to upgrade to Vista.
Nope.
Early adopters, man.
Bite me in the ass every time, I tell you.
So the technical, I don't. That's exactly what I don't want to get bogged in, the technical stuff.
Okay, so, you know, I just wanted to say that one bit, so carry on.
I guess what I'm saying is that when I looked at this, the game feels different. And I was trying to identify what is the nature of the difference. Is it just because this is a game developed in Ukraine, you know, are the things that this game does characteristic of European games or more specifically Ukrainian game making, or is it just time? I mean, because that's another factor. This is also a game that's been delayed that was originally announced in 2001, in November 2001. And is it a matter of, you know, and I think that's largely the case in some ways. If you take all those other games that I mentioned, Deus Ex and stuff, and you go back to 2001, it kind of makes sense. You're like, oh, this was where things looked like they might have been going there.
Mm-hmm.
So then you take this game that was kind of like a time capsule, but then ended up getting retrofitted to come out today. That kind of makes sense, too.
Yeah, they dialed down a lot of stuff, man.
However, and so let me just give some examples of the way that it works. You know, some of the ways that I think it does really succeed in being a game that breaks itself beyond just the super strict rail ride. At one moment, I'm going down a path and I see, you know, on my radar some blips of life forms, and it will indicate whether they're hostile, friendly, or, you know, or they're not persuaded either way to fight you or to be your friend. And the reason that's there is because there's this clan system in the game, and, you know, much like Oblivion, where, you know, you can join one guild and you can have rivalries with, or you can be a vampire and have rivalries with other groups and stuff. You can make friends, you can befriend some organizations and make, you know, have beef with others. But so I go over, I see it, and it's just some guys hanging around this, you know, this torn down village, this trees going through growing through the roofs and inside the houses and stuff. And the guy says, like, hey, I have a Gauss gun. Do you want to buy it for $800? And like, oh, that's great. I mean, the only reason I even knew what the Gauss cannon was because I played multiplayer and unlocked it for a fortune there. And it's just kind of like a rail gun, basically, you know? So I was like, oh, great. Sounds awesome. I'll do it. And here's my money. And of course he rips me off. Sound too good to be true. And it was. And he's just like, ha ha ha, you know, fuck you. And then he goes over to his friends and he's like, now get out of here before we fuck you up. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I happened to have just found a grenade launcher a little bit ago and I had three rounds in it. So like I tested that out and I blew all those dudes away. And I went back and I took my money off him. But then I realized that I had spent more money getting the grenade launcher rounds than the $800 that I lost to the dude. So I still felt kind of ripped off. I was probably about $400 short still for breaking even.
So about the principle.
But the fact that there was even a moment like this, I mean, and if you're an RPG player, you're like, yeah, so what? And I do that kind of thing in every game I play. We don't always do that in shooters, you know. And while I'm a strong advocate for the level of complexity and sort of the degree of intellectual engagement that shooters, especially multiplayer shooters, require, that is one type of decision that you don't ordinarily get to make. As simple as it is, it's very refreshing. Mm-hmm. Let me think of another example where you go somewhere, like say there's this large building and I'm supposed to get inside of it. And instead of having, you know, the path laid out to me, obviously, I mean, it's marked on my map and I know I have to get in, but there's no clear way in. The front gate's locked. I walk around the whole perimeter and I'm looking and I can't really find a way in. As I'm looking, I'm like, this is exactly pretty much, if I knew here's this complex and I needed to get in, this is pretty much what I'd end up doing. I'd case it and I'd try to figure out what's going on, where the guys are. And then like, as I'm walking by, I hear a guy, you know, whispers out to me out a window and he turns out he's a prisoner and he's like, hey, looks like you're trying to get in here. If you do, free me and I'll hook you up with something else. And that becomes an optional side mission you can take or not. But so you do find your way in, and then once you are inside the compound gates, there are just any number. I mean, at least five, maybe as many as 10, just different routes you can go. Climb upstairs first, come in the middle floor, come in through the basement, and just go in and clear it out and get what you need and get out. But, of course, it's going to play different every time you do it. But just knowing that I can go over here and see if this is a dead end, or maybe I can go over here. And it's like not – there are no giant arrows floating around in the screen. Mm-hmm. And this is something I think that is characteristic of American games of late, and it's characteristic of the mass market nature of games. The more people, now that you have more and more people playing games, and especially games of this category, a first-person shooter, it's got to the point where you have to make games for everyone. You know, it's like in the review I talk about sort of the no gamer left behind mentality, where, you know, if you're writing a book or having a movie, you can have a complicated section and people are going to skip by it. Maybe they won't understand it, but it's the movie's going to go on, or they could still keep reading, you know. But in a game, that's it. If they don't get it, then it's just a dead end, you know. So there comes the point where, like in Perfect Dark Zero, you got to put the flashing arrows on the ground and say, this is where you got to go. Right. Or in Japan, in Half-Life 2, they have the a Survivor arcade game, and they're just giant arrows.
Right. Right.
That's an arcade game. That. That's different.
Didn't it do that in Call of Duty 2 with the putting the grenades in the
it does, yeah.
Trucks or whatever? I mean, whenever you had the
a big glowing something. Yeah, yeah. A big glowing this or that.
It was like a mouse click.
Yeah, and whenever you have something like that, like say there was in Call of Duty 2 a mission where, you know, you need to repair wires, and as a mouse click, just like you're saying, oh, it's an F, you hit the F key. To fix these broken wires. Mm-hmm. But when that becomes the mode of interaction, then that's all you're really doing is you're going up to it and pressing F. You're no longer fixing wires as if you had actually pulled out some tool and sat there messing with it while you're getting shot at. Maybe you had to go take cover, throw some more smoke, and go fix it, you know. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose a few people, or a few people are going to have to, like, look in a manual or something, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the dangers. I mean, when you start making a game for every person and every single person is going to get through it, the highest level the game's ever be is for the lowest common denominator, you know?
Right.
So that kind of stuff is refreshing. It just feels like this game assumes your intelligence in ways that I'm not used to, you know?
It reminds me a little bit of your description of it sounds like Operation Flashpoint.
People are going to want to talk about this game as, you know, in the generic formula. Take a portion of this and a pinch of this. or the worst case, when they say it's equal parts this, and then they don't realize they have like an odd number. How can you have equal parts of a fucking odd number? Actually, that's from some preview that's out now for a game. Equal parts.
It's like 170% or something.
Yeah.
X, Y, and Z. Oh my.
And
my favorite.
Another, just going on impressions, you know, toward the end of the game in the town of Pripyat, where you're getting close to the sarcophagus, which is just where the actual Chernobyl reactor melted down and they threw the big lead containing thing facility over it. It's like, it's clearly late in the game. You're supposed to be getting a move on. There's snipers everywhere. Just a lot of guys you're fighting. And you're like, okay, I know where I need to go. I don't have any reason to go check over here. I mean, just how big is the city? Mm-hmm. But I did. And it's kind of weird. It's like a whole new way of gauging it. Normally in a game, if you see a bunch of enemies somewhere, you're like, okay, it's probably worth going over there, because that's one of the ways that the developers told me that it's worth going over here, mm-hmm. you know, because there's going to be an ammo supply or cache of something. So you do that. And there's not in this game. It's not just for that reason, but just, there's like a whole, like, I'm like, okay, I'll go over here. And there's a whole building and you go in. And the whole thing's rendered, interiors, you know, and I go upstairs and there's guys to fight in it and I'm still fighting and doing stuff and I can take ammo off them and get their guns and stuff. And then I just keep going around the whole back court and I'm like, to the point where I was like, this is just nuts. You know, it's just so far away from me getting to the end of this level and this stuff is just here. Like, who took the time to model all this and put it in when only like 10% of the audience might check it out? Similarly, you can go out in a field or something to find a massive... like a torn down factory or something. And again, in another game, if you see something that big where they've invested, you know, like when you get to the bridge in Half-Life 2, when you see a bit of environment where they've invested such a great degree of labor into, you say they're going to make some use out of this. Mm-hmm. There's going to be puzzles in this thing. Mm-hmm. There's going to be enemies, scripted shit. Train's going to come shooting by. Mm-hmm. And then, so you do, and you go. And the only thing in here again is like, maybe there's like two guys that were in there having a sausage or something. And some birds up in the rafters, but you can climb up around in it and everything is just rendered. And it's like, maybe, you know, at some other time, depending on how things worked out, you could have run into a gang of, you know, wild boar or people or something, but it's just so weird. You just don't, because it's not cost effective. I can't imagine, you know, weird. A lot of developers saying, yeah, go ahead and take 2 weeks and make a big factory. There's going to be two guys in.
There's no
and
reward
maybe
in
three
that.
Of you people that buy this game will go check it out. You know,
that's weird,
but it's like, awesome, though. I totally love that kind
of design. How much of the game is like that?
I mean, that strikes me as like...
A good amount of it's that way. I mean, it's not... Like I said, don't get me wrong. Don't go buy it and feel ripped off when you realize that, like, you can't go any... You know, you can't basically pick a compass point and go in that direction and just freewheel until, you know... I mean, because you will hit the ends of the earth in some way, shape, or form. And they might be, you know, they'll use radiation, invisible radiation cleverly to tell you that you can't go somewhere or this or that. But there's a lot of options. I mean, there's a lot of extra stuff that is just there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just me, like, being trained on easy games or whatever, but if I went into that big tower expecting, you know, something at the end,
mm-hmm. like some payoff,
would you be like, would you
feel
kind of
ripped off? I would feel ripped off.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I took the extra time to do this extra exploration, mm-hmm. so I should get the rocket launcher.
Right. And it's just, instead it's just there. Yeah, you go to the roof. That was that same thing. It's like, I made it to the roof. I found the way up. And maybe that wasn't even obvious. So you're like, surely there's a sniper rifle sitting up here in a giant crate of like armor-piercing rounds, you know? And then a bunch of guys are going to come running and try to take the factory back because whatever. Because
you hit the trigger point.
Yeah, but it just isn't there, and it's weird. It's like the whole point. I mean, I could be a scrub. Maybe this was just a messed up part. Like, for all I know, like the guy that made it is like,
I was in the level.
Yeah, we didn't. THQ told us we had to get this game out. And there was supposed to be a level there and whatever. But this guy thinks it's a work of art. So, you know, I'm not going to disabuse him of whatever.
That unfinished level's great.
But, you know, like.
But that would have been my probably first thought is like, oh, I didn't finish this. Or like, why is this here? Like, I would have been disappointed.
And in creating, but I mean, going with my theory to spin it into something positive.
Yeah, no.
like that if atmosphere is everything in the game, and is the chief success of it is just creating this world, and that's just how places are. They don't. It's like there's if you go out in the field, there's not like a tree and a rock over here, just so they can hide the gold underneath it that Leprechaun buried for your ass. You know, it's like they're just there, and they're just like that's part of what it means to be there. And that's a very cool part of the game. Some other things about it does well is that, Darren. Have you got to any of the underground stuff?
You know, I didn't get very far because of like my issues. But then again, I kept playing it, trying to get as far as I could. And let me see. I did the first bandit base.
Okay, so
I
mean,
I'm really really early on. I just did a couple missions.
That's like 5 seconds.
Seriously, yeah. But and that 5 seconds took me about like an hour.
Okay,
because
well, that's gonna last you a long time then.
Well, no. Yeah, well, that's
you mean because of Vista, not because of your shitty game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. If it was running at 2 frames, that's why.
Oh no! Actually, it was working great. Just whenever I would try to quick save or any kind of like change of menu state, it was just kind of like some kind of weird instability. But again, it's a technical issue that I know they're working on, and I'm still looking forward to playing the game.
So how big is it? Like, how long did it take you to break, like, bust through the first ending?
Straight run? I don't even know. I mean, Ryan, I played it for... I've had it for a while. I've been playing a lot of it.
20 hours?
I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah, less than that.
And you probably play fast.
But I didn't... I'm fat. I play these games pretty quick, and I don't obsess over every side mission there is, you know? There's plenty of game there. That's not even an issue. I mean, there's definitely, and this thing is selling for like 29 or 39 bucks.
Yeah, 40 bucks. Yeah.
So it's like, cool. You get game for your money.
Right.
So going back to some other stuff I want to say about is that if you look at it as an FPS with an RPG slant, it's easy to be really positive about things. If you look at it as like a true hybrid, where if you're an RPG player and you're expecting a full, you know, fully fledged RPG, you're going to be disappointed for a few different reasons. The money system, by the time I finished the game, it was like I realized I had tons of money and I didn't have anything to buy with it or anything. You know, there are only a few key places to get weapons aside from killing them and finding them. It's to purchase them and stuff and to trade. All the items and then you get in your inventory, the artifacts that would be the equivalent of like, you know, in Oblivion, you'd have all these different ingredients to make spells with and you can, you know, cast all these effects on your armors and stuff. And instead you just get, you know, one artifact might give you... resistance to radiation, but make you weak to electricity. It could make it so that you bleed out slower, but it burdens you. All these things like that. And in an RPG, it would be absolutely essential to manage those. Say, you know, I'm going into a highly radioactive area. I need to just completely buff against radioactivity and do this and that. And you can kind of get by without really messing with any of that, you know. And by the end of it, it just doesn't feel it doesn't feel like they had really figured out a way to deal with all this. You know, I mean, you can't just go like if you get to a really hard point in an RPG, you know, you could teleport back to town and buy a whole bunch of an item or something. In this, you'd have to walk your ass away, and it could be a whole long ways away, walk back to the dude and then buy a bunch of health packs, and you're almost better just trying to improvise and go from there. But the reason I bring up the RPG thing is like the undergrounds are kind of the equivalent, the stand-ins for dungeons in this game, you know, where all the big quests and stuff end up in these underground facilities. But they're really cool because, I mean, usually like the dungeons are, you know, supposed to be oppressive and stuff in these kind of games. But in this game, it's like it becomes a horror game. And they do some really scary, creepy shit in there. It's like I was far more unnerved playing this than I was playing Fear, for example, which positions itself straight up as a horror game. And it's just cool things. I mean, sound is always key. You hear stuff, but there's these invisible forces at one part, and you're not used to this. You don't know that this is something that can happen in the world, but they start throwing things at you. There's these weird flaming poltergeists that sort of like a fire will appear in a room and just start like moving itself around, and you'll have to duck under it as it flies over your head, and doors are banging and stuff, and you get to see some weird mutant that the equivalent of effect that like grabs onto your mind and like pulls your conscious out of your body up into its face. Basically gives you like this psychic raspberry and then lets you go. I mean, all kinds of cool stuff like that. And I mean, you're going around with your flashlight, you know, and you know, Doom style, but it just, for some reason, it was just so like oppressive and just nasty in there. And I couldn't wait to get out, to get upstairs again, but it was fun. I mean, it was.
Is it because it didn't feel scripted and they felt like you were being more like you actually were being like hunted or something?
Yeah, and I just wasn't like it just took me a little bit longer maybe to figure out the exact extent of like what the hell was going on. That like, you know, you can figure out the extent of the monster closets in Doom pretty quickly or something. And that game still gave me thrills, but or in Fear it was like, okay, these ghost guys are just gonna keep coming out, and they do good stuff. You get false positives because out in the world there's, you know, these electromagnetic anomalies that will distort the air and space.
Yeah.
And then once they condition you for that to that for a good 3 or 4 hours, later on you get these invisible guys or cloaking, so you might think it's just an anomaly on the horizon or something that's blowing around, but really it's like some dude running like on loping at you on all fours coming at you full speed. And then like right when it's in your face you're like, oh crap, you know. So it does that kind of thing really well. Any questions?
You told us everything. It sounds like the less you know about it the better.
Yeah, it was. I don't think I've spoiled too much. Just know that it gets scary and that it does, you know, that the underground stuff is actually cool. And even there I was happy because there are so many ways, like even the underground stuff is connected well, you know. There's so many, you go into a tunnel and you can leave in some other place entirely or use it to circumvent in some cases, you know, a lot of like fights that you might not want to deal with, but at the cost of being scared for a while.
It's cool because we've been needing a good shooter again. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while. I can't really think of the last great one for a good single player shooter. I don't think even last year. Yeah, that there was anything.
You have to go back to Prey.
Yeah, I like this kind of experience. Prey, it's so much. It's so rough around the edges, and it's so like Prey will seem so much more polished and it's just controlled in every other way. But like this is like I would take this over Prey any day of the week. Just so much more rewarding to me. And it's just the uniqueness of the whole thing.
It's cool because this was sort of kind of getting, you know, a bit of a taint around it for being so late.
Right.
Yeah.
We were all starting to kind of worry, I think.
Yeah. That happens. Well, but yeah, once things come out, that all can be forgiven if it turns out good. I mean, same thing happened to Prey.
Right. And hey, you know what? If Duke Nukem Forever is great, if it ever comes out, it will get a great review.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, all bets will be off when that thing... if that thing ever ships.
Yeah, the time is, like I said, in this case, maybe it was a good thing in that, like, it, you know, at least from my experience, that the delay, that it wasn't trying to stay with the times and it wasn't trying to stay with the big Hollywoodization of the genre, you know. It meant that it does mean that the graphics, they do look great. I mean, if you have the right rig for it and crank them up, they look great, but it's not Crisis or anything, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, this came from an era when, like, it was, I mean, this was like one of the first games that was supposed to show up what DX9 can do.
So
this is like, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah, in fact, I think that's how most of us saw it the first time.
Yeah.
Was we didn't even see it as a game demo.
Right.
It was a tech demo that NVIDIA was making.
Okay. So they really succeeded then, because if you saw it as a tech demo and it was that type of game that was going to succeed or sell on the strength of its graphics, I got to the point where whenever people would come by in the office and see me playing it, and invariably the first thing they would comment on is like how it looked like butt to them.
Really?
You know? Well, I think when people come by to a PC, you know, like the guys from EGM and stuff come by, they want to see their, you know, like, show us, justify
they see
why
crisis.
You got to pay all these thousands of dollars to play these games on this thing.
Yeah.
And everyone just wants to talk about the graphics. And I was like, by my reactions, I was like, shut up about that. I don't care. Like, you know, like, it tells me that the game is working. Like, the game is better than the sum of its graphics, you know.
And the best
part. It was never an issue for me. There's never a moment where I said, Well, there was one moment in the very beginning, and I showed Ryan. There's a dude's wrist that looks so jacked. And Once you get by that, that was like the only time where I actually poked fun and laughed at like how dumb and like how bad it looked.
What was wrong with his wrist?
It just looked like if you took and twisted it, if it was like made of rubber and you just took and twisted it and twisted it until there was like the joint was like about a millimeter thick point between two triangles.
Huh.
It made no sense because other wrists aren't like that. It's just this one. Maybe it's just like a birth defect on this guy. I don't know.
That's a feature.
Yeah. Hey, it's Chernobyl.
Right.
Anything's possible. No, but it is kind of cool, though. That, you know, it may look like butt, but the thing is, it's a fun
it
game.
It doesn't look like butt, but yeah.
I don't think it does. I mean, it just doesn't, it obviously, it doesn't look like Hellgate or mm-hmm. Crysis, but you can play it on a four-year-old machine, and it's going to work.
Yeah, that was great, too. Like, at home, I mean, I'm playing on a 9800 Radeon card, and it runs fine there. I haven't figured isolated what the deal is with the work PC, the 7800, that why it's not working so well on that. But
yeah, you have these busted work machines.
Yeah, I really wish that it's moments like that when I do envy console where it's like we don't have to sit there and try to sort out how much we have to talk about this performance shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I want to engage the game itself, not the fact that, like you're saying, not the fact that the Technicolor is broken or something, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And we have to at times. If the game, like, you know, if the game is not going to run for anyone, it's not going to run. But it would be nice in a world where... Like, yeah, it runs. That's fine. Let's talk about the game now.
Well, you know what? The thing is, it's infinitely better than it used to be. And that's because, you know, stability in coding wasn't quite as good back then. So now, I mean, like, we're actually way beyond where it used to be. I remember reading entire reviews that were all about game bugs and game errors as opposed to the actual gameplay itself. Yeah.
Well, that still happens now.
Well, but not nearly as often as it used to, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it does.
It happens.
So I've taken up a great deal of time talking about...
But hey, that's a game we all wanted to know about.
Yeah, we definitely wanted to know. I wanted to know about that for sure.
Now I want to play it. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about other things, including Peggle.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. But as long as you're here, let me tell you about EGM Live, the weekly podcast from the editors of Electronic Gaming Monthly, along with the wonderful sounds of... EGM Live comes action-packed with special guests, late-breaking news, fanboy-baiting commentary, behind-the-scenes tales of office tomfoolery, and trivia contests with fantabulous prizes. Download it now at egmlive.oneup.com or subscribe to it through iTunes.
EGM Live is part of the OneUp Radio Network, taped in the Ziff Davis offices in San Francisco. It is not actually live, and contest prizes are not guaranteed to be fantabulous.
And we're back.
Oh!
Yes!
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
I feel bad. It's like I had to. I mean,
no. We just, asked this you for the
my,
spew.
This was my week, I guess. You know, this game's coming out, and I reviewed it. So, Ryan, the whole time, it's not helping me, man.
Yeah, Ryan, you got to wake up. Think of it. Think of it as
glowering
at me,
that evil eye.
Glowering and yawning. Deadly combination.
It really is.
He's either bored with you or he wants to kick your
his
ass.
His eyes were saying,
make me tired.
His eyes were saying, shift eight, sigh, shift eight.
Whilst.
I just read your review.
So who else wasted their weekend playing Peggle besides me?
You know,
Darren?
I played quite a bit of Peggle.
Since I couldn't get Stalker to run properly, I was playing Peggle the rest of the time.
It completes will note Peggle. That the Why Chuzzles make a secret appearance, a cameo appearance in Peggle.
Who does?
The Chuzzles.
The Chuzzles do?
Yeah, they do.
Wait, I missed them.
Did you notice the space levels?
I actually realized that many, many levels of Peggle were going by where I wasn't even noticing the background.
The background's
I was just too fixated on the
That's
pegs.
Some self-referential PopCap going on.
Damn. Is Bookworm in it?
I didn't notice him, but he would be a good candidate for some of those.
I actually stopped looking at the backgrounds because they made them be as absolutely embarrassing as possible in every case. I mean, could it look more like a game for your daughter and your wife,
and you'll be fine.
Well, they were actually the ones making fun of me.
My girlfriend plays it. She's like, cute. Like at the yak, the big smiling yak that's like got his nose up to the screen, and you like bake shots off his mustache or his horns or whatever.
Right.
What is this game?
My wife Amy, she sees me playing it with like the unicorn levels in the beginning. She's like, "So you're playing it with unicorns now? That's what it's come to."
Yeah, actually, my wife came in last night. I couldn't sleep, so I got up and I was playing Peggle. And you know, there's something about that game. I really, really love it. I'm totally addicted to it. But there's something so fundamentally kind of pathetic about it because
There's not a game.
There's nothing to do. I mean, it's you click one button and that's your round. You know, once. You just shoot the ball and then it's just pachinko.
You know, I remember going to Japan and wondering, what the hell's the fixation with this thing? I'm just watching a silver ball drop down a freaking bunch of pegs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell's the point? And
plinko,
like,
not pachinko.
Yeah.
You have some control. Well, decide how far to the left or right you're going to drop that thing.
Yes, you can sort of aim it. Mm-hmm. They're like, now that I've beaten it one and a half times.
How superstitious you are, you can sway it after it's been dropped by
pushing the air with
rabbit's feet. And, yeah, pushing the air.
Right. Then you have to start choosing which dudes you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Power-ups or
whatever
you call them.
To be fair, I think the first shots are that way. And I'm not going to argue that this is like an extraordinarily demanding game for interaction. But by the time you get to your later shots, though, and you have a bunch of elements moving around and your timing, you're like trying to get stuff between.
It's true.
And eventually you will develop a pretty good intuitive gauge for where the ball, at least, not past two bounces, but up to two bounces.
Yep.
And that can be like very helpful when it gets to the point where it's like you have so many balls to get like 40, you know.
Right, right. No, I'll start going like, okay, I have five shots left. I've got these many. I know if I bank it off this. Mm. I mean, I'm definitely starting to develop some peggle strategy.
Yeah. Immediate like rewards for your intuitive assessments, you know, and your risk. I mean, you're gambling. You're like, okay, I have to get at least four on this shot. If I put it in this area, I probably got like a good chance of that. And to see it play out, it's like.
It sounds like something at like Golfland or Chuck E. Cheese where you drop the token in and then like goes down.
Oh, yeah.
And
then some
totally
tickets,
like that. It is like that, yeah.
Totally is.
They should make
a
virtual one of those.
You get like a fake mustache if you turn in enough tickets.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
But there's no tickets.
There's no tickets.
Like, do you have any tips for the level of it's like the riverbanks with like the two floating circles?
Oh, that one was tough, though.
Man, I was jumping.
Oh, with like the dude in the boat going. I mean, the dude.
Yeah,
like,
there's
the tube
like
going
two,
through.
Yeah,
like two inner tubes floating down the river.
It was funny that we were like before we started recording this, we were all talking about the relative strengths of each of the different characters that you could
right.
ball shooters
and different levels. Now, when they come up, I'm like, oh man, this is definitely like a flower power level.
Yeah,
I know. Go with the flower dude.
But that though, I mean, that's like we're so close to writing a strategy guide for playing a Vegas slot machine.
You're right. And, yeah. So on the one hand,
blow
we're saying
the
there's
screen,
nothing to do. And on the other hand.
Don't change your underwear for a week. Okay.
Rally caps.
But this is why it's a great game. But there are definitely moments. Oh, well, that's what I was starting to say when my wife woke up in the middle of the night and she saw me not in bed. Like she got up to check on me to see what I was up to. And, you know, I don't know if she thought she was going to catch me, like, you know, looking at porn or whatever. But she, you know, she rounds the corner and I'm sitting there playing this game and she just looks at the screen. She's like, you've got to be kidding
me. Dude, I know.
Because I just felt like bad. I was like, this is what you're up doing? I'm like, I'm sorry.
You know how there's like the pink balls are for bonus?
Yeah.
Like I got this whole thing where I'm like always talking about like, touch the pink. I touch pink. And like Melissa comes in from the other room and it's like one of those scenarios. Like, what the hell is going on?
Your Pez dispenser yeah. in a certain way.
Oh. I think the big draw of the game, of course, is like when you finish the level, it's like, how many ways can you heap on badassness to it? You got slow-mo, Matrix slow-mo
yep.
on your ball.
You do.
You've got Ode to Joy.
Ode to Joy. That's
the Ode to Joys.
The
makes me laugh every time.
That's the home run.
Just the big giant casino-style number counters going through. The chance for one last game of Plinko to get the 50,000 in the middle. And just, it's 50 in multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I've been playing a lot of lately. And then you can do the replay if you want.
Yep.
Which is so annoying when you're doing it in duel. Like, and the other person's like, hits replay again. hits replay again.
When I was playing yesterday, I turned the volume up because I knew that the boinging of every single ball hitting the peg was annoying the shit out of my daughter.
Wow.
She was in her room trying to read.
You'd think they would want to play that.
Buying.
They didn't play it and get hooked at all?
No, she thought it was pathetic that I was doing that.
When I heard about it, I'm like, this sounds like Melissa, my girlfriend, is going to like it. So that's why I justified trying the demo on my own. And sure enough, she completely loved it, you know. But then I saw something interesting, too. It was like my friend Rory, who's like hardcore gamer, and we play all the shooters and stuff together. He got the demo, and then he just like disappears off of AIM. We were talking about something, and Like hours later, he's like, dude, the crab guy or something like that. Just some utterance, you know. Oh, shit, you're still playing it? And it turned out on the demo. He poop-socked the demo because, you know, it's like on a time thing.
So he played it for
the
full hour?
He got to like the last damn thing, like the Zen shooter.
Yeah.
He's like the last character on the demo in the course of like the time limit thing.
Shit.
That's only like a 60-minute time demo, right?
Yeah, so he just like jammed through that bad boy. But
pretty good.
Yeah, so it's not
the
like...
The great thing is it has pretty good replay value, too.
It does?
You know, I start getting into the strategy of which guy to try beating your own score. Mm-hmm. Then they have all the challenge levels, which there's a ton of those.
They are. The PopCap games are over too quick, though, I think. After having done this, reacted the same way to...
It's Bookworm so good Adventure Center pretty cool.
I think what this was lasted fish longer game than
that. Was
Insane Aquarium?
No, but it, Feeding Frenzy too.
Feeding Frenzy,
you were all
after like, and guys go back to it now. Now that like you see what the deal is with like Peggle, like that game is rad. And but you'll beat it in like two sessions, and you'll be all like, "That's it. Where's more? Yeah. Like these levels are so easy to make. Can't you just like?
Well, we need the Peggle expansion now.
Yeah,
bring it on, PopCap.
Yeah. You know, that's how it is with a lot of their games. Like Rocket Mania is one of my favorites. I still go back and play. It's like you could just keep, even if you beat it, you just keep coming back to it.
Yeah. This one to me, though, I mean, as much as I like it, and I really do like it, it really felt to me at times while I was playing, like, this is the absolute lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Like,
well, play
Bookworm,
the window.
You're making words. You know, Bejeweled, at least you're dealing with shapes.
This is just throwing just rocks like, down a fucking
you're
well.
Dropping
That's part of the appeal, isn't it? Sometimes you just want to, like, you know, I just want to drop something.
Could I be any lazier? Not really.
Have it open in a window while you're like checking email or something.
It's not even timed.
Well, so imagine just, this, though. Yeah, now my girlfriend wants to do the duel all the time, and it, like the computer desk is like meant for one person. So it's like, I'll pull up another chair, and like another chair, I'm like way far away, like, you know, at this like messed up angle, like when you get the worst, I call it the parallax seat in the theater, you know, when you're in the front row on the far right.
Yeah.
And all you see is like a giant dude on your side of the screen that turns to a midget when he goes to the other side.
Shoulder.
So I'm playing it like that at parallax view and just trying to enjoy it. And I think I'm getting to the point now where, I need to take a break on that.
Does he use gamepad as well? Gamepad support?
I haven't tried. I don't know why you'd bother when
well, I'm just saying,
all
you
there
want,
is if press a button, turn
saying,
left or right.
How many keys do you need on your gamepad?
No, I was just saying in case you know, he's stuck in the parallax seat, he could pull back a little.
Lay back on the bed.
Yeah. Just chill back a little.
I see.
Come on, I'm not that lazy.
That might work. I don't see why not. Like I mean, like I said, there's left, right, and
exactly.
Shoot, and then speed up time, actually, with the other
I've
mouse
I've never
button.
Used that even once.
That can be good.
For what?
When you're waiting, when you get to the big, you know, massive whirly gig levels later on.
Yeah.
Them shits are spinning and spinning. and you want it to get to, you want it to get out of your way or whatever, or you're waiting for like a certain shot, you're trying to get that magic pink or the green.
Uh-huh.
Speed it up to where you need to.
I learned to love the pink face. Later on.
Touch pink.
It wasn't until my second time through that I started loving the pink. Now I go. For
and
the
then there's your soundbite.
So Peggle, you got the soundbite. Peggle, turn Jeff into a lover of pink.
I love the pink.
The one thing I wish you could do though is if you could
like some foreign language.
If you could like
get on the bandwagon, Sean.
Join the
Peggle bandwagon.
Join the pink.
Join
brigade.
The cult. Peggle.
One thing I wish you could
You're
do though
so much like, shit for the you said podcast for this dumbass to sit around and talk about pink. You'll notice I kept the nerd voice to a minimum too because I got that mail, Ryan, I showed you. That dude thinks is making fun of you.
I know. What's up with that?
Oh, no. That guy's right. He took he went through the trouble to,
is that
he
guy
through the trouble to mail
voice?
Me.
He cracked the code. Whatever.
What?
Is that guy saying I got a nerd voice? I mean, what's
he
up
is.
With that?
I don't know what's up with that.
He says that the whole, not only that, he was like,
this
guy writes into me, and he's pretty much ended the nerd voice as far as I can control it.
Oh, man.
Because if one guy took the time to write to me, and this guy knows his stuff, too. I checked his blog out, and he can't write a paragraph without having, like, whilst and therein and thereby and sigh bracketed by a couple asterisks. I mean, anyone that's on that tip is going to be able to tell me that something's not funny right off the bat.
He's the arbiter of funny.
Well, I'm joking, but I'm kind of serious because I really haven't really done the –
Was it a conscious thing?
But he was like, he was so, it's like, you know, you're making fun of your colleagues. And if you asked them, if you came clean and just said, they would all tell you, you know, it's got to stop. It's
ask Ryan
stop.
Now.
Ask him.
Come on.
Okay, before I ask you, though, he also pointed out, Ryan, that it was like a congenital, like, condition. He's like, you can't make fun of it. He's like, people are born this way.
This guy's actually being harsher on Ryan than you are. Because you're not picking on Ryan, like, and he thinks you are.
People are born. He gives me this, too. Like, this guy's straight out of his, like, freshman ethics class. He's like, people are born black, or they're born white, or Asian, or straight, or gay. They don't choose these things. I'm like, dude, you chose to beat off to a cartoon because, like, if you look at his blog.
Back away from this.
Easy. Yeah, hentai. Okay,
family
sorry.
Podcast,
okay.
Man.
Okay, but I'm like, you choose to beat off the hentai. You don't. You're not born like the part of your brain that responds to, like, images of aliens and, like, cartoon, you know, pederast scenarios. It was, like, grossly, like, deformed or bigger than that, the average person. I'm sorry, man. I can't make fun of the fact that you review hentai on YouTube. But so, anyway, Ryan, how is there any feelings knowing that that I make fun of you?
This is our Oprah moment.
Yeah.
Do we need a, Ryan? Do I need to clear away for a hug?
No.
it's never about Ryan.
Of course it's like, not.
It's never been.
I know I got a whiny, nasally ass voice. I make more fun of it than you guys do.
That's he also. Did you see what was the line about a deviated septum?
What?
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
He's like, that's another
sounds
physical
like Ryan
condition.
Needs to kick this guy's ass.
I was like, okay, man.
You just made Ryan's shit list.
I think I need to have a word with this guy.
Yeah.
I don't think so, you need to stop the nerd voice.
He thinks he's watching out for you, but
maybe he's just...
It's like, it's just backfired. Well, that's the whole thing. I think, and I mean, it's a dead giveaway. Like, if you use sigh as a sentence, you know, like in a blog or... Uh-huh. I mean, you're trainable. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to be too harsh, but I'm trying to be harsh. I mean, it's like... That's like
you are trying to be harsh.
Like that is that's why it makes you angry to hear that voice, because it's like, I mean, it is self deprecating, but
guy kept sighing near me in World of Warcraft the other day. Well, I was like
just walking through Azeroth.
Yeah, I was like, get the fuck away, sigh. Go sigh somewhere else. Why are you sighing at me? Sigh. Am I killing your boars? Get away. Sigh. See,
this is
like typing it out.
This is also random, but it was a good excuse. I like to bring these things up because it makes like people aware of like internet habits, so when you go on a forum and you're going to start noticing this stuff, you're going to be like, or maybe it's even you're going to be like, dude, I almost just type sigh because whatever. Satoichi-san announced that Game X is going to be delayed by 3 weeks and 2 hours, you know. Never mind.
Sigh.
Yeah, it's always, you gotta do it this way. Shift 8, sigh, shift 8.
Well, don't let this guy get you down, Joe.
Yeah.
He got me down.
Anyway, you know, we've talked about this before. This is not like a bullying thing, like we're like the kings of cool here. Pick it on the nerds. We're all
that's the whole
here.
We're
making fun of ourselves.
We're,
hello.
We're Games for Windows Magazine. How nerdy is that?
No one's getting laid with that logo.
Player.
Maybe that should be the new that's the new line that goes under our under the name of the magazine. No one's getting laid here. Games for Windows Magazine.
Games for Windows official magazine, son.
That's right. Represent the tracksuit.
It's kind of like when I'm not, you know, in an industry event or somebody, I'm like, you know, my daughter's school's thing or whatever. Somebody's asking me, like, what do you do for a living? I always say, magazine editor first.
Then I'm
figuring they've got something.
Oh, what kind
in their
of magazine?
Head, like,
and you're
Esquire.
Like, you so wish you could say pet fancy, bird fancy.
That's like five steps above.
Yeah. Like, oh, my grandma subscribes.
Knitters Weekly.
Games for what now?
It's really weird. Now I'm really. We're back in the tangent area. We need to.
Yeah.
We've been in a
need
tangent.
Need to reel it in.
This is
like
people
10
were glad that we were gone, Jeff, when we were gone last week because it was like not random tangent. And
see
I was
what
just,
happens?
I don't even know what I was about to say. Random ass shit.
See? We fuck up the podcast, you and me.
Utterances.
Yeah, you two suck.
Damn it.
Speaking of sucking, how about some reader questions?
Yeah, we could do that. we could do some reader questions. Reel it back in. How long have we been talking?
1 hour and 10 minutes.
Wow,
people like them.
Holy
people like them. Epic.
An epic. Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't all been in the same room in a while.
Yeah.
That's true.
Let's see. There were a couple that I really liked in the reader questions. So let's look over these.
We want to do that one.
Hey, what do you think? Probably shouldn't be mumbling.
That was a baby one, sorry.
actually, here's one that I kind of liked. And I didn't cut and paste anybody's name, so I apologize. But this was on the message boards. And thank you, anonymous reader, for asking. He said, something I've always wondered. Are you guys, like, awesome with playing games in general? Like the kind who go into a CS game and dominate, like, 42 points in 5 rounds? If so, is this related to how much time you spend playing countless shooters and RPGs and just get used to them? I'm wondering because I play a lot of shooters and I'm not bad but not very good at the same time. So is there hope for someone of my skill to make it into the video game journalism field?
I think a two-parter.
Yeah. I'm not even going to attempt because I can't write.
Okay, there you go.
And so, of course, that would be the big answer, of course, would be to learn how to write. Right.
Yeah. Well, then the other answer would be that a lot of people that do this aren't really that good at
Right. That's what I was going to say. Is
are good at games or writing?
Right. then you're kind of batting zero. but I tend to kind of mostly suck. I just actually love them, but I still play everything I can. And I shouldn't say that. There's certain genres that I can play very well, and that I consider myself very good at. But there's others that I like, and in genres that I would even review. But I'm not particularly an expert. I don't think that disqualifies you. Do you?
No, not at all. I certainly would not hold up very well on a Counter-Strike server.
Yeah.
Well, it's all specialties. I mean, like, Sean's like the savant for that.
There's mastery, too, where, like, you can not be the best, but you can know something really well, too.
Yeah.
I think that's right. It's a matter of literacy,
like,
I think.
I know there are people like, I mean, the kind of games I think about where, like, skill, like, really, you know, I'm thinking, like, Twitch stuff, like, shooters. Fighting games, too, before that. I mean, I knew there would be people that would know, like, the systems on fighting games and stuff, but they wouldn't really be able to apply it themselves. They'd follow it up on the hardcore boards and stuff. I mean, so there's that there.
Yeah, that one side of it, though, I mean, that's, like, one of the more common letters that I've gotten for years and years. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I'm great at games. How can I get into your field? And, like, well, those are two totally different things.
Yeah, that's, like, the worst thing you could ever...
Well, go try professional gaming first.
It's like a lot of people who are great at games.
Great at games.
Yeah. But you don't have to be great to be in this business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just about...
Hardly.
I'd say I'm fairly average. I mean, sometimes I'm really on, sometimes I'm really off, but it's not like there's...
I'm good at Mario Kart, but that doesn't really help me.
I always wanted to be, like, the group of people I played with. I mean, I usually always was the best.
Yeah.
I could start off with, you know, it was because it was just a small fish. I mean, it was just a small pond, so it was easy
Same
to be
here.
A big fish.
Like, in, like, the house I lived in college.
And then online came out, and I was like, I suck. No, I was like, I'm still good. I'm like, that's cool. But then it's big enough where no matter how good you are, you're going to end up in some place, and someone will, like, humble you so thoroughly that you're like, okay, I really don't even know this game. But like I'm confident, like, any average person, like, I say anyone that works in the industry, like, I'd bet on myself. That sounds cocky, but just, like, it's probably a fair chance depending on the game, like, not on not on RTS or turn-based or something, although I do like turn-based.
Well, RTS is a good one because, like, I would play a lot of those against my friends like on a LAN, and then, like, as soon as the online RTS started becoming popular, I just did not learn the correct
The
build order.
Oh, God, right, that kills you on those.
And then I just, like, would get reamed constantly. And I'm it's not because I suck, is it?
Right.
Or is it just because I didn't memorize the certain way to do things?
Right.
Right. People are clearly exploiting something in the design.
It's just a different level of competition.
Yeah, one, like, exploit or significant piece of knowledge will make all the difference. And that's why it's, like, all bets are off the moment you go.
Yeah, there's...
The moment you go, like, into a real, the big, wide-open online world, you know?
Yeah, the best example I could think of recently is I was playing Supreme Commander, and in that game, you could set up your build order from the very beginning of the game to the very end of the game, straight from the get-go, as soon as you start. So if they figured out the right build path, you are hosed.
Ryan, are you good? You good at ganking people? I saw you playing a little Ultima, running away like a... Actually, you weren't ganking anyone. You're running away like a bitch from a guy that chased you for a good, like, 10 minutes.
What the hell?
Whipping on you. I saw that, man. Remember I came over and stood over your shoulder?
Yeah. I just started my character. I wasn't ready to fight yet.
It was so rad. Ryan's running, and this guy, Ryan's on foot, and he's just running. And it looks just janky as hell.
Keep in mind, we're talking about a game that came out in 1997.
Right. So the guy on a horse is chasing him. And I was like, I could tell Ryan just wished he could talk shit, but he wasn't about to when he, like, wasn't as sure of his, like, getting away with his, like, life intact. He finally gets to this boat, and he hops in a boat, and I know he must be safe because immediately, the guy's standing there, like, looking at him because he can't get in the boat or whatever. But it wasn't that bad. You were just complimenting him on his fighting prowess, on his melee prowess or something.
On his manhood.
Ryan's looking at you like he doesn't know what you're talking about.
What the hell are you talking about, face?
There's a new character is why. You just made,
is
you
he
just,
making the set, Sean? Ryan?
No. That's no, I actually straight was fact. Getting chased by a PK in Ultima.
And you know it felt good as hell to talk shit on that guy once you escaped, right?
Carport.
Sure.
Carport.
Like if he if he had killed you, it wouldn't have been fun.
No.
Not fun at all.
You're here.
Call him out.
Okay. I'll read another question here. Again, sorry I don't have your name, but good question. I would like to know your thoughts on the recent released Geometry Wars for Vista. Not so much about the game itself, but the fact that it's a Vista-only release, especially considering there's already a hacked version with the OS check removed, and the game will play perfectly fine on XP. Does it make sense for MS to release Geometry Wars for Vista only when they could have released a version that runs on both Vista and XP?
I think it's awesome that we have Geometry Wars, and I would like to know where to find this hacked version.
Well, I'm gonna be a total dick, and I'm going to say there's a bunch of free games out right now that do the same thing as Geometry Wars.
That basically just emulate Geometry Wars gameplay?
Well, Geometry Wars gameplay was basically ripping off Robotron.
Right.
Right.
With funkier graphics. So, I mean, it was only natural for someone else to do the same thing.
Right.
I mean, Kenta Cho, there's a whole bunch of... If you just do a quick Google search for, like, Grid Wars or X Wars, or there's a bunch of versions.
It's such a weird game to pick as, like, a Vista-only game. Just like, hey, there's really this thing that's been out for Xbox Live for arcade and for like years.
Well, like, it came with 360s, I think, right?
No, you have to buy it.
No, it was a download.
Oh, okay. It was Hexic, though. It was free.
Yeah.
The thing is, I mean, yeah, they could have and should they have, I don't know, put it on XP, but like, it seems pretty clear now that their strategy here is just going to be upgrade to our goddamn new operating system.
Right.
You know, they're not going to do anything to encourage you at this point to keep XP. I think it seems pretty clear.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to make it easier for you to just keep going with XP. So suck it up.
Isn't DirectX 10 enough, though, for gamers?
Well, not yet. Since there's no DX10 games.
When that starts getting established, that's going to be the only... You're not going to need to give people any more encouragement. You know?
Well, true.
Well, right.
They're trying to think of stuff that they could do right now in the immediate time frame.
I think they're... Don't you feel like they're kind of saying, like, in a way, like, XP is dead? It's dead to us.
Yeah.
That they're sort of saying that. Like, no, we're not going to make it backwards compatible because we don't give a fuck about XP. We're on Vista now.
Right. And I guess in some ways, like, say you released a game for the Xbox 360 that totally could have been on the Xbox. I mean, is anyone...
Yeah.
If you use that logic, are you going to say, well, how come you didn't put it on Xbox?
And right. They want to sell their new operating system. Right. I mean, if people aren't buying it, that's their problem. You know, they state, and it is their problem, they need to convince more of us to upgrade. So, yeah.
Sounds like if the dude really wants to play it, he's found a way.
Sounds like he has found a way. Yep.
That he has. That's not saying the game isn't fun. It's a lot of fun.
I played a lot of that.
It's very like zen hypnotic. It's just kind of like run around the screen and shoot stuff.
It was all because of the stupid achievements. Let's not have that argument again.
Oh.
The achievement argument?
Yeah.
Never again.
The only reason I kept playing is because I saw someone else had a higher score on my friends list.
Well, at least now we're going to get to pay to get achievements on our own.
So. Play some worms.
Oh.
Yes.
Any more questions? That one was kind of petered out the whole. That took the whole conversation.
Why'd you choose that?
I don't know. I'm sorry. It sounded good when I was looking at it.
Let me see. What's the deal?
Would you guys actually publish an article written by a GFW forum member? There's a quick one. Well, we
who wrote
have,
that one?
Actually, haven't we?
We have.
Armand. Well, yeah. We and Rory Mannion, who's done a few reviews of mods, comes from the forums.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the answer is yes.
Yeah. You can write.
And also Tara Nelson, Snugs.
That's an article.
Yeah. I don't want to now like inundate
I'm not
my
encouraging
own inbox.
You all.
Yeah,
yeah. So then I'm gonna have a whole pile of like submissions,
but really that's how it goes. I mean, when people ask you know how people end up writing for the magazine, I have no. I mean, you'll hear a lot of people saying that you've got to have contacts or you have to know someone, and you have to be friends with someone and hang out in the IRC. All it takes is one sample. Like my, you know, one of my favorite freelancers that we have, sent me a dry sample out of the blue. You know, didn't know him, never heard his name, and I looked at it and I was like, okay, I could deal with this. You know, sent him right back, and then it's been right for us every month since. I mean, that's kind of how I kind of just sent, you know, my own samples in. And that's how I ended up doing this. And I didn't know anyone, didn't know a single person in it.
Yeah, it's not just samples, but also like, you know, also ideas. If you have an idea for a story and you can write, that certainly helps.
What the sample does for me, the reason why the sample is all important to me is you have to prove that you can do it.
Of course.
A lot of people have ideas but can't deliver.
No, but I mean, like, you have to have both. I mean, like, at least for me, like, when I'm looking for feature writers or something, if you have an idea to bring to the table, you know, we can definitely, like, evolve it or something. But definitely, you know, writing is key. I don't want to spend my weekend re-editing your stuff. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't want to make it sound like an American dream where anyone could do it, because then obviously, I mean, the big factor there impressing us could be really difficult, you know?
Yeah.
And in order to do it, I mean, you have to have been writing like someone, a certain magazine just closed and one of their writers sent me a submission. And give you an idea of just how thorough people looking for this kind of work are, though. Had a whole story fleshed out. Here's exactly the angle. Here's the context that I'm going to draw on. Here's basically the dimensions of it, how many words I need to do it. Here's my experience doing these sorts of things. And you look at something like that as an editor, you're like, okay, here's the proof that they can write. I mean, here's some samples attached to it. Mm-hmm. They've already done the organizational work, proved that they've got this thing, all the ducks lined up. You know, it's like, great, sounds perfect. Let's go ahead and do it, and I'll be happy to see it, the final product, in 2 weeks or whenever, 3 weeks. I mean, that's
it. Also involves knowing the editor, and not necessarily knowing them personally, but like knowing what they're looking for. Like, this magazine does this kind of thing, and I know this editor has said he likes this kind of story.
That's the other part of it. Yeah,
You can send it to one person, and they don't give a crap. But if you send it to someone else, they may go, this is exactly what we're looking for. Mm-hmm.
For me, it's always knowing
the audience, knowing your clients, I guess. Mm-hmm.
If you're an experienced writer and you just do some review and it's in like the GamePro, the GameSpot format or something, and you send it to another outlet, I mean, they just throw it away immediately or just click delete. I mean, that's what I'll do. Like if I see something, and it might only take it like 2 sentences in, and I'm ready. All time, I got my hand over the delete key, you know, and it's like, so that to give you an idea of like, it seems easy because you don't need any connections, you don't necessarily need the degree or anything, you just need the good sample. But that's how harsh the critique of your sample is going
to
be.
This is a basic truism of when you're applying to any job anywhere, so you have to know where you're applying to.
Exactly.
If you want to write for a magazine, then you got to read our magazine.
Exactly.
And know what our style is and try to emulate that.
What you shouldn't do. What you shouldn't do is email one of the editors and say, hey, you got anything for me?
Yeah, compare it.
That's like the worst.
That's the worst. I've heard
Big
that so many
peeve.
Times.
Yep.
Yeah. Compare it to like the person I just mentioned who gave me just this. I mean, the outline. When I say an outline, it was probably about, you know, 600 words to 800 words of just like them, you know, very, very articulate talking about what they propose to do. Mm-hmm. Compare that to someone who's like, hey, this is something I won't say his name, but some dude like 2 weeks ago sent me a PM for one, not even a. I have on forums told people to hit me up via PM, so I'm not talking about them, but unsolicited sends me a PM on the 1UP network. Unsolicited.
Yep.
And it's like, hey, you've probably heard about me. It was like, I've never heard of this dude in my life.
That's a great start.
It's like, I can do, you know, I just wrote about like some baseball game at Shecky's Game Shack.
It's like, TM.
What? And Shecky's Game Shack, that's not like a covert, because I just realized that there's a Game Shack.
You know, actually, I've been copying
that.
You just made something up.
It has nothing to do with it.
I've
been using Shecky's Game Shack for years as a default fake website.
Right. So, and I like that because like I had an ex-girlfriend as an undergrad, and she had a dog named Shecky.
Even better.
Where was I going? Anyway, so unsolicited sends me this, but just the whole tone was just like pure entitlement.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, it's not a matter of like if you're giving me work. It's just like, how many
good news, Sean, I'm free for work now.
Yeah, and it's like,
who the fuck are you?
What the hell? So I did. It didn't stop me from, it didn't stop me from looking at a sample, but that took about, you know, all of one sentence to hit the delete on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, on the one hand, we don't want to be discouraging,
But you don't email us.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is possible. It's possible if you're good and we like your stuff and it fits in with our magazine. It's possible. I mean, the other factor at work here is that we have a limited page count, as anybody who's seen our magazine knows.
Right.
And we've got a lot of great freelancers we like already. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of competition for the pages as well. So there's that.
Yeah, obviously online's the place to go to get all the...
One-Up's looking for fresh faces all the time.
Got no page counts on the web. You can yabber on and on.
Speaking of yabbering on and on, JFW Radio.
Let's get the hell out of here.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right.
So we'll be back.
No heroes of the web?
No heroes of
this week?
Whoa, not this week.
Really?
None ever?
Come on, Sean.
That dude wrote me.
He really?
PM'd me. Said,
oh,
no,
shut up.
Don't do it.
Really, if you want Heroes of the Web back, really, you heard it here now.
Petition
Sean,
right
Sean
now.
Sean is on a moping sadness strike.
I don't know. Moping, so this is straight up. That dude.
He told it like it is.
If you want Heroes of the Web back, let us know on message boards. Otherwise, Sean is retiring it.
Slash Yawn.
It's done.
This sucks.
It's over. It's had its time. It was good. It was good while it lasted.
Kind of like Canadian Corner.
It ran its course.
Yep. Okay.
No more Whiskey Nerd? Oh, well.
Even Whiskey Nerd is gone, Sean?
I don't know. Well, you might.
Can Whiskey Nerd sign
I kind of like
back.
The dude, the Psy voice has got to mature into its own. into its own.
All right. We're out. We will see y'all next week. Everybody have a good gaming week, and we'll see ya.
Play some Peggle.
This has been a presentation of the 1UP Radio Network. For more shows, visit podcast.1UP.com.